We are starting the new year with an awesome interview. I'm very much looking forward to this. It is I Should Be Writing Season 18, Episode 4.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting home watching Doctor.
And hi there, welcome to I Should Be Writing, the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. We stream on Twitch live twice a week at 3 o'clock Eastern Time, and then we put it in the feed, so you can get this later as a podcast, or you can get it right now. I have with me Nicole Glover, author of The Conductors. So, hi Nicole, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you. There's so much to ask about your work and your career so yes. far. I'm excited. We usually start the show with me trying to do, now I can't think of the word. I'm trying to tell people that I'm writing along with them. That there's a word that goes with that. Anyway, I did 2,000 words today on a battle scene that I was not expecting. So that should be interesting to put into my outline after I write it. But so I'm glad I got that done. Nicole, do you want to report any writing work you got done today or not? You can not.
Not yet. My writing stuff doesn't happen to the evenings. I had work today. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I usually save my writing for the after work. I mean, I might, you know, jot down a few notes or something like that. I think I've been right. I guess right now I'm figuring out. I'm starting a new draft, new story stuff, mm-hmm. and I've been kind of I hit the wall about 40,000 words I think last weekend or so.
Oh,
realizing,
no.
Of course, the big problem was something in earlier I did. Basically,
yeah.
I had I'm in that since I'm stolen. I'm going so I hadn't really got to the point. This is the point where I start outlining, where I start figuring out little details. So basically, I spent this week kind of going trying to figure out that one area that. To fix things, and I think I found it, so I can probably this weekend hopefully start moving further into like the first drafts phase. So
excellent.
Yes.
And we're gonna do a quick spot of good news. Things keep going on for me, nothing new and exciting, but if you guys have any good news, let me know in the chat. And if you're listening to this later and you've got good news, then email me and say you've got good news in the subject, and we'll put it on the next episode. But I'm here, I'm ready with the applause and the yay button, so if y'all have good news, please let me know. Oh, we don't have the rejection thing on here. we're counting rejections this year. Rejection counter is at 1 right now. People are high-fiving in the chat for Knight Riders Unite, so you've got some buddies with you. So, you're not
yes.
alone. Under Pope's COVID test came back negative. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Apparently just a cold. That's good. I think I'll go ahead and get started with Nicole. If you have any good news, please don't hesitate to put it in the chat. We will mention it later. And I'm just excited to talk to Nicole because your work is fascinating. Because it's... There's just so much. First, tell us about the books, and
yes.
I have them here. I'll be giving these away, by the way, so we're going to do a giveaway of both books. I'm
Yay.
Excited for that.
Free books.
Yay, free books, yes. The Murder and Magic novels.
Yes, these, the Murder and Magic series follows a pair of mystery-solving magic users, Hedy and Benji Rhodes. They're a married couple who, in the past, were partners in crime as Underground Railroad conductors. And now, since it's been about 5 years, 5-6 years since the end of the Civil War, and they're in Philadelphia, and they're figuring out what they want to do with next to their lives. And they're like, let's solve mysteries, because that's where their talents lie, basically. So they basically solve mysteries, magic mysteries, murders, and stuff around their community in Philadelphia. And basically, the first book sees them take on a more personal murder as a close friend of theirs is found dead, and they have to go diving in. into figuring out who did it, why, and it dives into commuting friends, and this leads to all unexpected places, basically. And both books are pretty much standalone. There's mysteries of this, them figuring out this, exploring the world, and just having fun with the magic side of mystery solving.
Excellent. So as I said in the episode title, you're mashing three genres together, because you did a lot of research for this to be alternate history as well as magic, fantasy, as well as murder mystery.
Yeah, I did. It's a I was been working on it for so long. I really don't think pieces kind of work together. So I think I kind of view like the history side as kind of the scene setting. It's like the part of the world building. It's like that's what I use to set the place, basically. And I guess in this view is like the mystery is it's the engine for the plot, and the magic is the fun elements that kind of everything ties it together. And I guess it makes sense in my mind. It's all like one thing. It's not really. All this kind of came together in a kind of natural way as I was just plotting out these stories. I started out with a simple idea of these characters and kind of exploring the time period, and just it all just kind of came together in a way that it's and this little genre mashing, which is a lot of fun. I like pulling in different aspects of different things, and it gives me some flexibility. It's hard to write a straight historical fiction story, because you feel like you have to adhere to all the dates and details,
right,
and make everything precise. You got to look up the weather, see if it's actually snowing or sunny.
Wow.
It makes you don't have necessarily have to, but sometimes you feel like it. Like, you know, and there's a lot of times when I was doing research, I was like, I'm researching, like, you know, if they had toothpicks or whatever things, certain inventions were made, or like when certain pieces of like music or plays or things like that happened. And you know, then a lot of times I'm going to end up pulling back, remembering I have magic in this world, so I can like be fuzzy about certain things. If the bicycle was invented earlier, is more popular than it was at this time, it's fine because I have magic going on. So,
yes.
So there's things like that. And also be able to blend, I guess, the magic side of things into kind of pre-existing history of this world. Because I said it in, you know, a world that in the U.S. that's not too different from our own. I keep it pretty close to history because I wanted to play with the historical times and blend some magical aspects of certain things, of just of like kind of basically heightening like of things that are already in history, whether it's like looking into certain laws of that time period and adding a layer of like what happened, people have magic, what laws would people have about who can do magic, who can't do magic, and all those different things like that. And just kind of just playing with that blend, it makes it fun for me, in a sense, of just to write and to create things and just imagine the world in itself.
Well, it's awesome because I think it sounds a little bit like you're doing it was easy for me, so clearly it's not that impressive. It just sounds like you're very comfortable writing in this historical setting, and that's awesome. Because if it was me, I would like go down every single rabbit hole, because I'm not really a student of history, and in hindsight, I kind of think I want to go back in time and say, don't study other writers, study how things happen in society and understand that, and then you can write stories about it. But yeah, I didn't do that. But
I think the problem is, you know, the way we view history a lot of times, especially I guess from school, it's kind of just notes and facts. And you miss all the fun, like, interesting details about things. Like, you don't learn about, like, certain cultures having, like, certain, like, early machines or steam engines. Or, like, you know, having roads, like, you know, really, 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 really built roads in, like, out in, like, places in South America, for example. Or just unique, interesting stories of, like, tidbits you don't hear about. Because we just have a really flat view of history. And then also since you have facts, and then, you know, they make it boring too, because they take out people actually lived in these times, because we just review things as like, these are numbers, these are wars, these are battles, these are the politicians, these are like the certain scandal, these are like legislations and, you know, kings and queens and all the terrible things that happen, plagues and all that stuff. And you forget about how people live day to day and stuff. And it's just fascinating to kind of pull back and think of how people live day to day, like, you know, how all of those different things. And I don't know, I guess maybe because I think it also probably helped I was I always liked history as a kid. I read a lot of little historical fiction books as a kid. I liked, you know, history in general. I guess I like learning new things. I mean, it doesn't help too. I grew up in Virginia, which the history of the U.S. is taught a lot. And mm-hmm. I lived around all the big historical areas. Lived around Yorktown, lived around the Manassas Civil War, all this other stuff. So all the history stuff that gets talked about of some prominence. It's around me and stuff. And I guess that probably helped in that sense. And I don't know, I guess also with coming with history is I've always been intrigued by how, I guess they always say like the whole thing about history is that you don't repeat it, like it's a history is a circle, that sort of thing. Like you see things in the past and you can just change the names and dates and it's much present. And it's fascinating and both in from an objective point of view is just seeing patterns and also terrifying to seeing that we keep making the same mistakes over and over again.
Yeah, I'm with you there. We've got some comments in chat saying Catwood is from Williamsburg and totally gets what you mean. Grew up with a lot of historic fiction and history field trips. In North Carolina, we did too, but I'm from the mountains and nobody talks about the mountains. They talk about like the coast and the colonies mm-hmm. and stuff. So about the mystery and fantasy, are you well read in both of those or did you... this is not an insulting question because when I decided I was going to write a mystery science fiction book, I realized I didn't know about mystery and I was rather frightened that I had just sold this book. So I was wondering if there was any aspect that you kind of panicked about and did like deep dives into.
Not really, because I'd always been pretty well read as a kid. You know, I'm the typical bookworm. We read a bunch of different things because, you know, went to libraries, went from like school libraries, public libraries, or the little libraries and classrooms mm-hmm. from donated books. So I've read a good thing. I mean, I'm pretty deeply read in fantasy. If I haven't read it, I might know, I'm at least aware of like the big stuff, mm-hmm. basically. And yeah, I read a lot of little mysteries, whether it's like from the classic ones to like the random kind of like, you know, Babysitter Club mysteries. You know, those things, those little adjacent things. So I felt pretty comfortable. I think it's an occasion I might like brush up. I think I'd probably brush up with a couple more, like this try to read some more recent mysteries as mm-hmm. I got into writing. Cause they always say it's good to read stuff that came out within like the past 5 years or so to get a sense of where the genre is or what's being sold, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's a benchmark. Yeah.
Yeah. The classics for a reason and we study them for a reason. Yes. But when it comes to actually writing what sells today, you can't really rely on the classics.
Yeah, there's been a shift. I think I want to say that I read an article talking about the shift from like golden age detective stories to modern day, looking at basically who's the protagonist, how the role of police is, and basically all those different kind of tropes of the mysteries and how it moved from like more from a whodunit to more of like why and howdunit these days. And it was a long time since I read it ago, but it was a fascinating thing to really think about like how just like one particular genre we see, like, you know, it's the bread and butter of like, you know, mysteries are always really popular. And that's probably why, like, you know, things like true crime and like CSI and stuff, it was really popular because, you know, the heart of things, murder, mystery is really popular, is really well liked. And it's been interesting to see the shifts of how we view certain things and how it's just probably kind of changed a bit.
Yeah. And like you said about the why did they do it, I read the Save the Cat Writes a Novel craft book, and she puts mysteries in the why done it category, not the who done it, because that's more interesting, even though, of course, they're linked. But
yes, it is.
So one thing I found interesting, you know, some people do prologues and some people hate prologues. You have done something different in both of these books, which is... sort of open with news reports, or in the conductors, it was more of, I wouldn't call it news, but more like pamphlets of wanted runaway slaves and or wanted for stealing slaves and amendments and stuff. So how did you come up with that structure? And 'cause it's really neat.
Yes. I read this in the book a while ago. I think it was Orleans. I'm blanking on the author's name, but it was a book came out about New Orleans, like a young adult book that came out I guess late 2010, 1989. But it's called Orleans. Orleans or Orlean. Mm-hmm. But basically, it had the same structure. They had news clippings and stuff that opened the book. And I really liked the style because it set up the history of, like, you know, for the past few years of this book's world about what happened and certain things. And I really liked that. And I thought that was a good way to open my world for the conductors, because I wanted to establish from the get-go that this is a historical setting, but it also has magic in it. I want to have that magic and history was tied together right from the start. So that's why I made sure one of the opening things was kind of slipped in there. There's magic in these things. So you slowly got into whether it's like figuring out what these characters kind of hinting. It also hinted at who the main characters are. You get little bits of pieces of who might be the characters, and as well as some details about the world, and it's kind of blend the magic in there. And I thought, I really liked that. And I thought that was a good way to open it, to give, because I didn't want to just flat out tell people from the start.
Yeah.
And it also slowly gets people in there. And it's funny because I think someone had mentioned to me that they actually thought it was a real clipping I had sent in there. Because I actually looked into like the wanted posters. I looked into newspaper stuff. I even looked at like the legislation code stuff I kind of mimicked.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I looked at that stuff to kind of mimic the kind of language of that time period. And some of them actually told me I thought it was real. And even though they saw the magic part.
I was just about to quote that. Approach with caution and bring shock collar to subdue any magical attack.
That's what I liked about it. I wanted to slowly bring people in there and say, here's magic in this stuff. Even if he didn't get from the cover, you know, read the blurb, that sort of thing. As you got into the book, because instead of just dropping it, even though I still drop the magic in there within the book when the book starts properly. But I just wanted, this is another way to slowly bring people in there. And also, it's this other details I wanted to just bring in there that I didn't want to, that it won't, I was saving to slowly weave into the story later on. Because mm-hmm. I think I'm always worried about doing the info dump, basically. Because there's so much details I want to bring in. I've established this, how much the magic is in this world, how this world functions, the magic functions and stuff. And I don't want to drop all that in there within the first couple of chapters, because that's boring. It takes people out. And so I had to slowly, it's having those little articles in the front. There's one slow way to get that in there. As I slowly weave my way into the book. So when I finally do a little info dump, it feels like a good spot for it, basically. I gave you some like information that's sort of been spooned out. So now I'm giving more context, basically.
Yeah, I would actually argue that you do it quickly, because you're mm-hmm. giving us information that, and you avoid every single trope that a lot of authors stumble upon, such as the "as you know, Bob," like, you know, waking up and telling your husband that you do magic. Yes. And he knows this, but you need to tell it so the reader knows. Yeah. And it's like you make people interested, but you don't, it's not like a dry, omniscient narrator. So, I mean, it's just, there's so much you accomplish with these three little wanted posters and the amendment. And then Undertakers does the same thing with newspaper clippings, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just like, I don't know, it's like bringing the back of the book to the front of the novel and giving a little bit more detail. It's just very good for whetting the appetite and getting people interested. So,
yeah, I guess I wanted to break up information throughout the book. Because, like, even for, like, if you have the print version of the books, I'll have the constellation that's top opening each chapter, basically.
Oh, right.
Because I wanted, because since I use my magic systems based on the constellation, I call them star stones, but they're basically the constellations. And because not everyone has a good memory for these constellations.
Right.
So I want to have a visual component. And I decided, instead of having an appendix in the back, I wanted to have, like, you know, the opening up each chapter, like, you know, part of, like, the little chapter heading. And have a little different constellation. And so people have a visual they could refer back to or in stuff. Or just, even just keeps with the theme.
Right.
And stuff. I thought it was actually an idea I brought to my publisher. And I was really happy they said, like, yes, let's do this. I felt really strongly I wanted to have information in there, right there for people to have on the page.
No, I love it. It's really great. I just showed chat one of the chapter headings so they could see the constellation. It just feels like you've done so many interesting things effortlessly, unlike every other writer trying to get this stuff or trying to describe a constellation in prose or something. It's just very cool. So this, what one thing we just I discovered right before we started talking is these books both came out last year, and
yes,
that's like a whirlwind in a normal timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you tell us about how did that happen, and how was that decision come up? How did it come about?
I have to mention the pandemic playing a role into this, because The Conductors was originally meant for November 2020. And because of pandemic, paper shortages, and all the shuffling of other books on the schedule, it got bumped into early 2001. And Undertaker was always kind of set for the fall of 2021 anyway. And it's kind of, and they basically wanted the pivots on there too. And I also got to mention, The Conductors originally had November 3rd or whatever the election date was of 2020. Oh. That was the date it originally was.
Oh,
and no. I was like, when they first told me that about back in 2019, I was like, okay, are we going to do that? And I think the only thing I'm grateful for the pandemic is that I got moved. I don't know. I want to be counting down to that date, basically. But anyway, that's how the scheduling wise happened on the editorial side. As for me, I sold the Conductors into 2018 and spent most of 2019 getting it ready to go, basically. And I was also starting with the Undertakers end of that same year. Because when I had sold the book, I had only written The Conductors at the time when I first sold it. And the editor was like, yeah, we really like this. We want to have another book, too. So basically, I had a two-book deal. And they said, let's do a direct sequel to the book. And I was like, okay. Because originally, my first plan was that as I was researching The Conductors, I had gotten really interested in other time periods, too. So I had this loose plan of doing different decades kind of set in this world. And so that was kind of my plan that I was initially pitching to editors about. But they're like, let's do a direct sequel to The Conductors. And I was like, okay. So I always had ideas and plans for these characters. And I also really like these characters. And it's even more as I was editing, getting the book ready for publication, I had all this stuff I ended up cutting that became perfect fodder for the Undertakers, basically.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, like all the any kind of extra research, cut characters, cut subplots, or had room for certain subplots that didn't really tie up all the way in Conductors, was able to be able to easily move the book in book two. So I basically had a really rough structure of what book two was going to be about, even as I was working on the first book and get that ready for publication. So basically, I turned into Conductors at the end of 2019. I start work on book two at the end of 2019, going in to 2020, and I turned that in March, and then I get back edits for the first book to work on, and it's basically a cycle of just getting the first book ready and getting back edits from my editor for book two, and again then once Conductors is like done and do all the copy edits, final pass and stuff, I move into book two for that. And the timing was such that my copy edits were basically ended up a year apart for each book. I had copy edits from Conductors in like the spring of 2020, I had copy edits for Undertakers in the spring of 2021. So it was like even my copy editor was like, this is a deja vu all over again.
Wow.
So I had a lot of deja vu anyway at the start of 2021. I even had even more just going through that same process again. I even looked at my old emails, and it was almost to the date of a year apart.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. One benefit of writing both books together is that I had a pretty good idea of how the certain subplots would link together, things I wanted to kind of carry over. I didn't have to worry about losing the voice of these characters, because I know there's sometimes authors would say, like, they move between different projects, they lose the voice of the world, the characters a bit. I don't think I got a really chance to lose that, because it was kind of really close together. I don't know, I was able to, just kind of map out certain things and decide, like some things I got cut in book one, I could put in book two. And also just gave me the things of what I wanted to work with. And I also went in book two thinking, since the book one is about like setting up the world, introducing the characters, introducing to the magic, introducing some of the basic stuff. Book two was for me to have a little more fun of like expanding out the world, expanding, looking at other relationships within the book, I don't know, just having a boss, my main characters, Hedy and Benji, just solving stuff and just hanging out together and just bringing in some like fun little quirky things of things I like in book two. Because book two, I was able to bring in my interest in underground tunnels, those ghost stories I felt I read in folk tales, of even like a cipher of like that they had to, that was that played like a subplot that was a thing, all that stuff. I even brought in a bookstore and a magical library in this
Oh,
book.
nice.
And so like it basically, I was kind of, I guess my thing is going in these books is I'm gonna write everything I like and make sure I get as much as possible that makes sense in the book, and that's all that's. That was the benefit of just having this all the stuff that goes together. And only side benefit is that it just all the stuff blurs in together. 'Cause especially with the kind of the marketing and talking about both books, is that I had to, especially with, it's mostly with the book two. When I started doing the publicity, as the book two was coming out, I was still talking about the conductors because it was still only, it was barely 6 or 7 months before between the books. So I was still kind of talking about book one, even though I wasn't getting talking as much about book two. And I almost felt really bad about book two because even though it's like it's I mean it's the same characters in the same world and stuff, I wasn't giving its own shine. It's like its older sibling was taking some attention. But I guess that happens when they're really close together. And I do also knew sometimes that not everyone, it's in between, the short amount of time and everything else going on. Not everyone got the chance to read the first book. A lot of times I talk to some people who it's the first time they're hearing about book two. It's the first time they're hearing about the books, it's the book two, and like they're not sure of another book and stuff. But I guess one benefit for me was that because they're mysteries, I was able to write things fairly standalone. So that it wasn't like it's not, even though it's a series, it's not like a really tightly knit series. So that you had to read certain things in order. I mean, it's preferred, as they always say, prefer to read them in order, but it's not that's not necessary. And stuff. So that was one benefit. That's one benefit, I guess, being a mystery. That makes mysteries popular in general because you can
That's a
kind
good
of
point.
jump in at any point. Because barring some like long-standing stuff, but it's usually not really a big deal. And most mystery series I read, because usually like relationships or like big enemies, that sort of thing. It's always a thing with other mystery series and stuff. But yeah.
I would love to ask you a question. I saw in your author note that you enjoy video games. So I wanted to ask you what you play.
Yeah, it's a lot of RPGs. I just got off a year of like several months of being obsessed with Hades and
Oh,
stuff.
yes. I
Oh
love
yeah, I played
Hades.
two. I played it twice. I did two rounds of it basically from start to finish with both sides. Over 200 hours. It was just like I don't think I've ever did that many hours in a single game before. I mean, I've played these RPGs. You can rack in, pretty 50, 100 and so hours, but it's the first time I did 200 hours in one game and actually was able to aware of that, in several months. But yeah, I could talk about the beauty of this. It makes it how it rewards you for being bad at the game. The really easy, for me, especially since I'm a UX person, of how easy it was to kind of just get the flow of how the understanding how the game is and stuff. But yeah, I actually had to put that down for a while. I think the new stuff I've been playing, or kind of newish, one that's kind of new to me was Persona 5 that I've been playing. That's like a really popular, like I guess a Japanese RPG game. And because I mostly got hooked on, started playing it because another UX person I knew had talked about the UI of his, how it was structured differently. I thought I was gonna give it a go. I thought it actually was shorter than what it really was. I thought I was only gonna be like 50 hours. And only to find out this game at the minimum was like a 100 game. If you got a 100 hour game, it's if you do a speed run basically. And I was like, oh, this is supposed to be my breather game. But but anyway, I think I also picked up on Steam on this is a game called Wilder Myth, which is like a it's kind of like a tabletop kind of like it's a kind of procedural game. It's generated, it's like little stories, but it's like little sprites and stuff. It's kind of fun, even though like it's very generic stories that you kind of pick and play, but you can kind of customize how they look and you can and stuff. It's a little fun. I think I played it a little bit a few weeks ago. It's like little things and stuff. But I'm also I got some other I also bought some new games on sale. One of them I'm really excited to play is the Phoenix Wright series. It's like the lawyer games, which I only started playing because I remember from years ago that there was, I guess they had some Capcom versus Marvel fighter game, and Phoenix Wright was one of the fighters, and I was just so amused. about a video of this lawyer character fighting like Marvel characters. I'm like, I was like, I gotta find this game and find out like a little mystery kind of visual novel thing. I recently just got the, I guess it's supposed to be his grandfather or something, like a prequel in a sense. Okay. I guess people were surprised actually was actually localized because it's, I guess not many of those games come over the U.S. So I was waiting for the go on sale for a while. So I finally was able to get that. So that'd be my next game to kind of play as like a true break between all the long RPGs I've been kind of playing.
Right. Yeah, I put the link to Wildermyth in the chat. And try to remember, tell my producer to put it in this show notes. Also, you'd mentioned Orleans. Here it is. Thank You, Kids Are Asleep. Orleans by Sherry L. Smith was, she found the author to that.
Yes.
And yes, lots of people are showing extreme interest in Wildermyth right now. So lots of people are playing it right now, apparently. And that looks really cool.
Yeah, it is. I was surprised how easy it was kind of figure out what's going on, and even how attached I got to some of the characters. I think I did one round and everyone died after a battle. I was like, I was so sad about this, because I guess you kind of, in a sense, in the game time, you see him progress throughout, I guess, the career of being like adventurer. And I was like, I was trying to keep these characters alive, and then they die. Even though I guess because I was near the end of the end of this little round of the game. Anyway, so they just kind of died instead of like, being to live on to another day. So I was like, I was kind of sad. And so after I lost all the party, I started a new game because I was so sad about it.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you about your website because it is a level up by any author website I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It's nicole-glover.com. And if you go to nicole-glover.com/books, you see the covers for Murder and Magic. But then, under that, there are these... Well, actually, it looks like a game because you see cards. You see a beautiful image of one of the characters, and on the right side is their information. So Henrietta, Hetty Rhodes, Sagittarius, Sagittarius Sun, Capricorn Moon, etc. And you've got these for how many... it looks like eight characters. So whose idea was this? How did you get the art? How did this happen? Because I want to totally copy you because it's gorgeous.
Yes. This art, whenever I started from writing, it's like, I always wanted to commission artists to draw my characters. Basically, always wanted to do that. And I knew when I got the deal, like I'm definitely have the money to actually pay some really good money to get some stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
And my main inspiration of it is like the clue cards from the board game.
Yes.
Yeah, because I don't add them on this website, but I also got some weapons like cards done too, like different ones, like things like an axe, a potion bottle, a hairpin, that sort of thing. And I don't have it on this game, but basically, I was inspired by the clue cards as a way to, just as a character card, and it was kind of fun. So I contacted this artist, and it was like, kind of passed on this idea. This is what I wanted to do, and I gave a brief description of each character, and she just worked magic. Because I gave her a brief description of things, and all these details from like how the clothing is done, what these characters are holding and stuff.
Yeah.
She did all that on there. I didn't tell her to do any of that. It was all from her. And I was like, she was like reading my mind and stuff. And it's like, that's the fun thing about working with artists. So like, kind of let them go. I just give them some details. So here's what I kind of want, and kind of let them go what they want to do with it too. And it's like, that was just such a joy to have this in there. And I knew once I got those, I was like, I'm definitely going to have like a visual on my website to kind of just to introduce the characters. Because I think that's a thing with a lot of mystery novels, is they have a cast of characters, a dramatis persona or something like that. So that's the idea I kind of brought in there. It's basically like it's the main character. You see the main character, Teddy and Benji, plus the main supporting characters. It's mostly their friends. And there's some other kind of key players that will appear in both the books. And so I think this kind of brings the details in there. Some stuff that, it's also I wanted to bring the astrology in there because, there's a lot of stars stuff in this book. So it's like, those things, like that's part of the bio, basically. But yeah, it's... And as for like the website itself, I'm really happy to say how you pleased your how I put it together, because I was it's basically me using a taking advantage of the WordPress's like no templates, and kind of making it work for me. I guess because since I have a background in tech and just kind of work as a UX researcher with on the website, and I knew some basic, I'm not the best coder, I knew some basic stuff, but just the sense of how websites work and making sure everything works, looks nice on the phone as well as desktop and stuff. I guess every so often I go around and just rearrange how things look and how you link to certain pages in there. I kind of rearrange just how things are laid out because, you know, I want people able to find things easily because that's my job. So I want to make sure my website's reflective of that.
That makes a lot of sense. UX is not easy.
Yes.
It's really not. Also, I do want to tell people for on the awards eligibility page, both the conductors and the undertakers are eligible for any novel awards. So we're going to hope for that, definitely, because these are gorgeous books. And you do realize with the art on this page, and if you've got art of items, you're like halfway to a game. You need maybe a little bit more art and some rules, and throw it up on Steam, man. This is really cool.
That'd be fun, because I actually do have a little history in making games. Back in high school, I did this project. It was big. It's like an end of year project that I basically built a board game.
Oh wow!
Oh my gosh! I think it was based on the logic how I got to making a board game was that I did a research project about Joseph Campbell stuff about, you know, the storytelling myths of like the circle, like the hero's journey basically. And for the board game, I drew on like different myths around the world as character as players to play in this game, and I just kind of basically just made up a board game for it and stuff. And in hindsight, it's probably that wasn't the most exciting kind of gameplay, but, you know, I put it together. I actually made the board game, made the pieces and everything like that. Got my first little Wacom tablet just to try out so I can draw out things for the board itself. I don't know if I still have it or not, but I don't know if it's still, but my mom still has it or not, but it was a fun thing to make. Those projects were always about getting to me do some artsy, crafty stuff. So, yeah. Yeah, so I do have experience doing that thing. So I'm not sure if, I don't know about now, but yeah. There's always the hope to find someone that's interested in doing things. I would love, actually, to make this world into a video game of some sort. That would be amazing to me.
Yeah, we got people saying there's a good market for the visual novel games on Steam. So
I actually had played. There's this company. I guess I think Frogwares is like a Sherlock Holmes series. I actually played one of their games last year, basically. And it was actually really fun because it's, you know, other than like the little it's the sleuth solving stuff. Mm-hmm. It was like, I really like the mechanic of like when you're going between like locations. Like for example, you're in the coach and you can open up like the deductions window basically and all the clues and stuff. So it's a good way to keep yourself busy during the screen loading time, which I really liked. So, like, you can pull up, so you can, like, while you're like, even though while the stuff is moving around, you can do some work as figuring out the mystery and stuff. So I guess I was playing that game. I was thinking, like, what if I turn my books gonna have like a similar mechanic or similar style or something like that. I don't know. Who knows? Someone out there might be able to do something with it.
That's very cool. We're going to take a moment and say, if you want to win these two books, I've opened a giveaway in chat. You can, as the bot says, type bang exclamation point magic if you want to win these two. And if you're listening to this later, I'm probably going to do a giveaway on, I can't say probably, I got to make a decision. Yeah, I'll be also giving away a copy of both books to anybody listening later. So you can email me with a giveaway in the title of the email and say you want to win these books so we can get those out to you. I'm very excited to put them in your hands. So you are Whirlwind debut author. What kind of advice can you give to our listeners who are not quite at your level, since you probably remember what beginning writer or beginning professional information would you give?
I guess from anything is that I always have a certain schedule for how you write and stuff. And sometimes that I guess for me, since I work during the day and stuff, I always have I kind of have a schedule where it's like, you know, it's I write it like I write at night, I write weekends and stuff like that. And so I have this block of time. I guess when I'm not like doing the first draft, I don't really have a word count. I mean, I think I found over the years that the word count is like it's the elusive. I guess it gives you a sense you're being busy for certain things. But I think as I always find all my work is like in the revision part. It's not the drafting is getting it's getting my it's like it's a big large scale brainstorming. I mean, it's me getting words out on the page. You know,
Yeah.
it's all about revision. And so I'm more time to dedicate more to dedicating a certain amount of times, but also finding some breaks and stuff because I'm really have a really bad habit of like taking my vacation from like my day job is still it's me working because I'm working on my stories. So it's like I try to find some time. I try to allow myself to have like time, you know, to goof off, play video games, or you know, cook, or even just do the household stuff, you know, that they'll build up because if you're working from with stuff all the time, you get burnt out really easily. And try to feel guilty about it because I think this particularly this past winter break holiday and stuff, I had to, you know, allow myself that feel like I wasn't even though I took some like, days off writing and stuff, so I can kind of just you know allow to my to kind of fully relax and stuff. But like other advice and stuff, like, other than that, it's like you know always carry the notebook with you. I mean, I always have like a notebook and like 20 other pens, some that work, some that don't, that I can have to just grab and jot by. Because there's been times I literally woken up from a dream one time and wrote some stuff down in a notebook because other just to have on hand. And stuff like you know, just write what you like to what you really like. Don't try to write to a market or anything or trends because you're gonna at the end of the day, you're gonna look at this book at like 50 different times in different 50 different ways, and you gotta have write something. If you write something you don't really like, you're gonna end up hating this book by end of it. And you might still do anyway if you write something you like anyway, but you're still like it a little bit more if you're writing to trace some kind of trend or something like that. And I think other stuff is that you're on social media. Don't try to compare yourself to other people. Everyone's coming at different places of this stuff, their journeys. And you know, it also you're seeing a curated view of things. You're not seeing the behind the scenes because that's a quote I read. What some I read remember reading somewhere said you're seeing all your behind the scenes stuff of behind the stage, and you're seeing everyone else's like pristine presentation. But they're probably as messy as you are behind the scenes too. But you're not seeing that. And try it's a good thing to kind of remember that. And in the cases when you do feel the stab of like jealousy or envy, try to pick instead of just kind of dwelling those feelings, think about why you're feeling that, whether it's like someone getting a deal or doing certain things. And take it as more figuring out how do you want to figure out how do you want to get that same thing, basically. Try to make it productive in a sense, because it's really easy, especially with all information being bombarded at you on social media, to get to those deep down those negative feelings because it's easier to succumb to those certain things instead of like trying to just twist it around and try to make things a little better, I guess. And yeah, and as always, rejections are always you get rejection for everything. Rejection just mean you're doing something. I mean someone saw you enough just to tell you no. And that doesn't mean it doesn't mean you have to stop. It's basically you're getting somewhere.
Exactly. And thank you for reminding me because we did have some good news come in at after we'd moved on, and I'm gonna go to that scene real quick because thanks to Litrapod, our rejection numbers go up. Congratulations, belated Litrapod, two audiobook rejections. So team rejections numbers go up twice. Well done. We're hitting the yay button for that for sure. Southpaw and Shards had some good news as well. I forgot what those are. I apologize if you want to say so in the chat. Tell me. If not, just congratulations. Yay. Yay button hit. Very good. One thing I loved about what you said, sorry. One thing I loved about what you said was not knowing what other people are going through, and they may not have yours. I actually had that discussion with a friend of mine. I was whining that a mutual friend of ours was being very pressured productive, and she's just like, are they the majority? Are they the main caregiver of a child? Are they the main driver of a kid? Or do they have your mental health issues or physical health issues? And I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess my situation is unique to me, and I just need to do the work that I can do and stop comparing myself to other people.
Yeah, it's hard, but it's really hard, but it's always good to remember. It's like try to focus on yourself, because if you do it compared to everyone else, it's not going to end, basically. There's always something to be jealous about someone if you go along that path. But it's one of those things.
Although I do still say I'm angry at anybody who takes a historic male creator and says, well, Tolstoy had a bunch of kids and he still
Oh
wrote a
yeah.
bunch of stuff. And I'm like,
Oh yeah.
how much
Oh, I could talk
laundry
about.
did Tolstoy do?
Did he cook anything? How many servants did he? Oh yeah, I could probably rant about that too. Just beyond the unseen, unpaid labor. That's not there.
But still, it matters how
Yes.
you view yourself and cut yourself some slack. Hey Daniel, good to see you. Thanks for the follow. We have if anybody just joined us, we do have a giveaway going on. Exclamation magic will get you in the drawing to win Nicole Glover's two games, or two, we're talking about games, sorry, two novels, which are
Yes.
The Undertakers and The Conductors. And I don't know why I'm holding it up to the camera, because the covers are there on the screen. So, what's next for you? Are you doing another one, or you did say you're working on a first draft, kind of in the sloppy phase right now?
Yeah. I can't say much more than that. I can't say anything
Okay.
officially. I have to be coy right now.
Totally understand. That's very fair. It's hard. It's really hard to know when to talk about what you're working on. But we
But
definitely. Sorry?
yeah, I always like to stay busy and stuff anyway. Even like last year, like after I turned in The Undertakers, I was like, I need to write something new. I call it my palate
Oh,
cleanser.
okay.
So it's like, I just wrote something just to write some stuff. I'm always playing around. I guess I don't know if the, I always have a bunch of different ideas that get on like a my little short list of stuff that I want to write eventually. And some of that list gets changed. Like I changed my mind about maybe I won't write certain things. Like I wanted at one point write a middle grade fantasy novel, mostly because I like a lot of the middle grade books I've been reading lately. But I think I tried writing one, I guess back in 2020, and it just didn't pan out the way I wanted to. Like I like the characters, like the world, so like put that on the back burner. I might get to that eventually, but so basically, it's on the list with the other ideas that kind of come across, because it's the fun thing about. So I got into listening to more podcasts recently, particularly like so I can know science and the history base and like other eclectic topics in that kind of field. And so the thing is, listening the downside of listening to those things, I get all these ideas from this listening to these random stuff. Like there's something like this. I think I listened to a podcast the other day talking about how I guess interest in vampire is tied to tuberculosis, basically, because there's like the blood and
Oh,
stuff. And
yeah.
yeah, and it's like, and I was like, oh, what if I do like a historical send off to like vampires, even though I typically don't really like vampires as a genre, but taking this little twist of like taking that disease aspect of it was like intriguing to me. And so I basically like maybe it's like a potential question mark. I don't know if I'll ever get to that, but it was just little things like that just kind of pop up. It's like, oh, I just make it make kind of a little list of projects to be. But I always like to have something going on, because I guess because since I work during the day, I'm like I always feel like I don't have enough time to do all the people who work full time and let me write full time basically. So I always still have that thinking like I'm not productive enough, even though I'm technically doing two jobs. I'm lucky that I don't have to take for anyone else besides me. So I have that. I'm better looking in that aspect of it. But at the same time, I'm like, I keep thinking I'm gonna have if I was able to write full time, I'd be able to write so many books. But then I do this when I take off time from work and I have this full time writer life for like this few days of like vacation time. I was like, I don't know if I really like that because. Maybe because I get conditioned, like I write in the evening. So like my days when I'm off, it's like, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, lolling around, you know, not doing as much writing as I would have done usually.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing too. Because of layoffs, I've been working from home for a while. It wasn't necessarily a choice, but then I started making it kind of work. But the people underestimate the demands on your time that other things will crop up. And sometimes it's just your own resistance and procrastination, like popping up and saying, well, yeah, you could write, but look at all that stuff you can be doing. And during a pandemic, that's harder because it's better. It's like nice if you leave your house to go write, but that became more difficult for us to do safely. So, sometimes it's easier. The quote I'm thinking of is the if you need one thing done, ask somebody who's got 100 things on their to-do list, not somebody who has nothing, because the person with 100 things could probably fit it in somewhere, because that's clearly what they do. They may not like you anymore, but yeah, it's staying busy is a good thing. I've finally started sticking to a routine, which is why I've finally had some good solid word count this year. But yeah, the routines and the also you can't it's like writing that long is just exhausting. It makes your
It
brain
is.
feel like a wrung out sponge kind of thing.
I think the most I wrote one session, like I was looking at the weekend day. I think I got to close to 7,000 because I think it was I was because I was like it was one of those days I was like near I was like, I had a lot for this scene in particular because it was like a big scene, so I had a lot of words. The words came easier because it's like a scene that I had a good idea about. And that's probably the most I'd done like in one session. I mean, it was not throughout the day. It's throughout the day. It wasn't like within like 2 hours or
Oh,
something like
sure.
that. It was though throughout like, you know, a weekend day. You know, I mean I probably maybe stretched because you know, I usually stand up a little bit later than I should on weekends, but you know,
Yeah.
but you know, this it was that was probably long as I'd done like a particular a single writing day basically. And it was I felt a little bit tired afterwards. And so when I see people talk about, you know, 10,000 and stuff, I'm like, you're just gonna hurt yourself.
Yeah,
I don't know.
yeah.
I guess I say, but I always have like goals that kind of do it and stuff. Like whenever I'm drafting, I do have like a, I have like, you know, a minimum goal, like, you know, 2,000 for like weekdays and stuff that I can do fairly easy because sometimes I might outline like an idea of a scene or at least I like, have like a few notes. So that kind of helps. I think always, I don't think, I think the idea is like if you have like kind of like a little outline or like idea of a sketch to the scene, basically. It's easy to get those word count goals because you're not just writing without like a map, basically. But I always feel the difference like when I'm just writing, just getting the words coming out. And sometimes I can get some stuff out, but it's not as much as I could if I had at least a few words of a scene already jotted out on my notebook, even if it's messy or something like that. But yeah,
No,
and that's why
that's
I
good.
usually always say I end up outlining eventually, even though I don't start out outlining a book. I might hit that third wave part of the book. I have to outline
Right.
just to know where I'm going.
Yeah. We got about 20 seconds or 15 seconds left in the giveaway. That would
Okay.
be exclamation point magic. Get it in there if you haven't already. And the giveaway is going to close in about 5. And Dice Lily says, I love writing out the scenes you have firmly in your head. It's like downhill slope on the roller coaster.
It is
Yes.
nice. There's always, I always have like, there's always a couple scenes in these books that I have, there's scenes I'm basically writing towards that like I want to, that's how I know I'm done with the draft. Once I have these certain scenes written down, I know that I'm done with the first draft basically, or done with this particular revision of the draft because I got this, got these scenes down. And especially when I'm writing towards one, it actually makes it a little bit go faster because I'm really anticipating getting to that moment and stuff. So yeah. Having this, yeah, I guess it's kind of having a goal post or a sign marker, I guess, signpost.
Right, that's true. We're gonna go ahead and pick the winner by random chance in the chat. Who do we got? K Kimmy has won. Awesome.
Great.
Congratulations, K Kimmy. I'll email me your. I probably have it, but just in case, email me your address and I'll get these in the mail to you. And I like this whole giveaway thing. It's fun.
Yes.
We can wind down. I've had you here for an hour, but can you tell me what are you reading now, and what did you read in 2021 that you would recommend?
Oh, I guess they're reading that. I actually just finished the book of the Cats Who Saved Books. It's a translation of a Japanese novel that's been out for a few years now. And so it's really short. I actually just finished it. Yeah, just yesterday, I think. And that was kind of fun because, it's kind of a it's kind of like a kind of a parable fairy tale kind of things. Talking about the love of books, that sort of thing. And it was just it was a nice little short read and stuff. Because I think I've been reading a lot of different nonfiction stuff, kind of research related. That it was nice to be switched to kind of a little fiction thing between the things of like as of other things of. I think also of other stuff. I can't. I guess other. I guess as other books I probably read than last year that stand out. Yeah, it's things I really liked. It was Master of Gen by P.J. Clark, which it was a which I was really I was into face it's anticipating because I loved his short novellas of the in that world before, and I was really excited to really like dive into the full size novel for him. That was great.
No, he's incredible.
Yeah, I
I'm
was
not.
impressed by his yeah I was impressed by his novellas because there's just so much in that short amount of space, and it just leaves me. I'm so impressed by it because I have a really hard time writing short things, and I'm like I was impressed how much he got into all that world building and stuff. So it's like it was fantastic, and that was a big standout for me. I always have a few books I'm really anticipating for you, and I was really glad to have that one really meet my expectations. And so it's that was a big standout for me. I think oh, that's other things. I always try to read different other things, but I'm not. I feel really bad. I feel really bad. I feel like I should be recommending a bunch of things. It's not like I never.
Whenever people ask me that, my brain just turns off. So I fully understand. Like, read,
I did.
have I read anything?
I actually was able to read a few through my one of the libraries I have because I got several library cards because I moved different places.
Oh,
And one of
wow.
the ones that, yeah, it's a little trick you have. If you have any longs are active, you can hook them up for Libby or something. And anyway, one of the ones I had, they had a bunch of, they've been getting a lot of mangas, basically. I think I read Spy Family, which was like basically a, it's like a, so they're basically undercover as like a family, as a spy, as either spies or different, like not normal people, but they're like pretending to be a family. And it's like all this, the tension of being spies and lying to each other. It was kind of fun. And I think I'd also read, apparently the creator of the Fullmetal Alchemist came out with a manga retelling of, I think it's a Legend of Arslan. Arslan. I think it was recently an anime, but it's like it's based off some Japanese fantasy novel. I think I read the first few volumes of that particular series, and I really liked that. I read that most recently because it's I was mostly curious about like what she does next and stuff. And I thought, that was kind of fun. It was like a, I think it's like a, it's a kind of a, like a high fantasy kind of, I think kind of. I want to say fictional Persia because some of the names seems like that, but it's like basically a portrayal. Like there's a young prince that's collecting, a party members, I guess save his kingdom or something like that. And I don't know. There's, I think there's always a few comics and stuff that I read every so often. That's I read a bunch of comics through Hoopla, which is another little library system, which is a godsend for all the comics I want to read, I guess. I'm not a big, buyer of comics. I'm really particular because I end up reading, I guess we used to say more like like trades and graphic novels in a sense. I'm not really big on the, even though I do enjoy the occasional Marvel, DC. Like I guess because it's just so many, it's so defragmented. Like I like the continuity of certain series and stuff. But anyway, Hoopla gives me access to every all those different comic stuff, and so I've read a bunch of different ones. And it's always kind of funny seeing what's gets advertised because with all the new Marvel shows popping up, I'll see suddenly on the Hoopla the new like the old Hawkeye comics or like the What If comics, the really old What If comics are all popping up recommended on the
Oh, I
Hoopla.
bet, yeah.
It's always fun. Like or when the Old Guard came out, I once was it last year or the year before
Oh,
when the movie
I
came
don't
out?
even know what time is, but I did see it.
Yeah,
It was
but
quite good.
anyway, when that comic, when the movie came out, the comic was suddenly being recommended on Hoopla again. And it's always interesting because it's always fun. Like, if anything else is going on, because Hoopla used to do this thing where, like, when a celebrity died, their banner would pop up on there. And I guess they took it down. But someone must have complained, because that's actually how I found out Carrie Fisher had passed.
Oh,
because. Yeah. I was just topping up on the Hoopla, and suddenly one of their top banners thing was like remembering Carrie Fisher, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's like more accurate, I guess, quicker than news or something like that. But yeah, that's, yeah, all this, I have so many different like access to stuff, so it's kind of fun. But it's mostly in between like all the research and stuff I'm doing reading. So I actually put in, put on hold a bunch of like more research books to go along to read alongside. Cause I like to research while I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
So in between, I guess, my research jobs, I try to have some like lightweight books between stuff. And I spent a lot of time just rambling about things I'm reading or not reading. I'll give you really
great.
Good answers. But you know,
everybody wants
try
their
to
be read pile to be higher, so.
Yeah, I guess I'm really particular about certain books a lot of times, and sometimes I'm not particular. There's not always I guess there's an economy. One author was saying, like, once you become a working writer, you don't really have time to read too many particular books, keep up with all of them. Even though I try to do my best to keep on top of like all the stuff, because I usually check out my Libby, like through the libraries and stuff, see what's coming out and stuff. That's a good way to kind of collect things. And there's always audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, and I'm trying to find some like older audio. So I guess I'm noticing a lot of like older books, like I've been coming into like audiobooks now, or I guess because whatever deal's been brokered on the back end and stuff. I've been trying to find good ones. But the thing is, a lot of times, because I read faster than listening and stuff. I always have. I'm really particular about audiobooks sometimes.
Right.
I never like to listen to nonfiction on audiobooks. Like, because I like to be able to skim and jump around.
Sure.
And with fiction, particularly with them I'm investing a certain amount of hours and stuff. But I take my stories whatever best way is interests me at that time.
Yeah.
If that's not the way to say anything. It's, you know.
All right. Well, we have one more Stream Raiders to do,
yeah.
And then I believe we can bid Nicole farewell. If anybody has any questions, please put them in the chat. Most everybody's agreeing with your book choices, so
yes.
It's. I was curious if you had if you like any horror comics.
I'm not really big in horror in general. It's funny. I think that when like the Jordan Peele's movies, like the Get
Out, yeah.
And Us came to theaters. I ventured out because the trailers intrigued me. And I think it's sitting before the previews for like other horror films reminded me horror is not my genre, like, and stuff. So it depends. So sometimes I mostly been interested in looking into more because I saw the documentary for like Black Horror that came out. I guess it's been out for a few years. I was able to catch it finally. This basically is a history of like black people in horror films,
mm-hmm.
and kind of with adjacent science fiction stuff too. It got me interested in the kind of looking into more like older stuff and looking at what's coming out now. But in general, horror is not really the genre I go first to.
Right.
It's definitely not my strength for writing, but it's something I like to dip my toe in occasionally just to see what's out there, because I always like to see what's out there in different genres too.
Yep. For some reason, I like horror comics more than prose or movies or something. I don't know why. You just brought up the Japanese, the manga you read, and reminded me of my favorite horror comic. Horror comics are from Junji Ito. So, anyway, thank you everybody for hanging out in the chat and being an awesome audience. Nicole, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me about so many awesome things. Remember, the books are The Conductors and The Undertakers. Very glad to have you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be. It was fun to just, you know, talk about things in general. I can ramble on, as you can tell.
Oh, no, it's great. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, we didn't get a chance to do our, like, half detailed and half free fall, but that was just awesome overall. So the feed people get an extra long episode this month. Congratulations, or this episode. And Nicole, you've been fabulous. Thank you so much. Remind us of your URL, please.
At nicole-glover.com.
Excellent. And everyone in chat is saying thank you, Nicole. They're very grateful for all your advice too. You like, I asked for one thing and you just gave me like four, which was fantastic. Of course. I'm definitely going to check out The Cat Who Saved Books. That's looked really cool. I Should Be Writing. It's available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting home watching the doctor. Watching Doctor Who.